For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, so we're going to continue on in our Essential Jesus series. I think we got a couple more. This has been, we've been doing this since May, I think. And today we're going to look at a very short passage in Matthew 11, 28 through 30. It happened in this area called Galilee. If you look at a map of Israel, Jerusalem is down there by the Dead Sea. And Galilee is this region up in the north. And when Jesus was up in this area speaking, he was talking to really a mixed crowd of people. There were people that believed in him there and people that didn't. And to everyone that was willing to listen, he makes this invitation. He says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." This is a famous passage. This is a favorite passage of a lot of folks. And I think one reason why we love this passage so much is the offer of rest. That's obviously an emphasis. This is what, you know, if Jesus is holding out a platter to you and making an offer, he's offering rest. That's the invitation to come and have this rest. And so the way we approach this morning is going to be super simple. I'm just going to talk about what it is and how we get it from Jesus. How does he actually give us this rest? Now, as far as what this rest is, it's not physical rest. You kind of get the sense that Jesus has more than a good night's sleep in mind here. So it's not physical. Now, I remember when I was a little kid, big people were always trying to make me rest. I used to hate that. Parents, you know, it was like nap time. I remember in preschool, I still remember we had these stupid nap rugs. It's like a little rug. And at the right time, you know, like 2 in the afternoon or whatever, you had to roll this thing out and lay there for 20 minutes. And I remember just laying there wide awake, just hating my life, just, I don't want this. But you know what's weird is as you get older, you start to appreciate rest. You know, if somebody came up to me today at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon with a nap rug and said, "Why don't you take a nap?" I would be all over that. I'd be like, I'll take 40 minutes, not just 20. I think what it is, you know, life gets more complex and more dynamic and more challenging. We get knocked around a little bit more, and we start to get a growing sense that we do need rest. Not just physical rest, but something deeper, something more nourishing than that, something Jesus calls rest for your soul. I was trying to think of how to help everybody feel what I'm talking about, what Jesus is talking about, this idea of soul rest. I wonder if you remember during the national championship game, OSU versus Alabama. In the third quarter, Alabama pulled within about 6 points. I think it was like 44 to 35 or something. That's bad math. You get the idea. They're within about a touchdown of us. And I remember, you know, looking, I was in a room full of people watching the game. And there's husbands bent over in stress. Wives are consoling them. You know how stressful you can feel during these games. And then, though, we got all the way through most of the fourth quarter. And about the 3.5-minute mark, this happened. This is Ezekiel Elliott breaking off an 85-yard touchdown run that put us up after the 2-point conversion. It put us up by 2 touchdowns. And I still remember that feeling in the few minutes after this, just like, I think we might win. I think this, like, wow, like, yeah, it's happening. This is actually, we are going to be the national champions. And there was just a settled sense of, okay, I'm good with this. It's something like that. The word for rest here... This is all you get from God. It's just that. Now it's a little deeper than that, but it's a calm, patient expectation that things are right or that they will be put right. It's an inner being rest. It's a deep rest. Here's maybe a more sober example of this. Here's a guy, Horatio Spafford. Anybody know who this is? He wrote a hymn that we've sung here a few times called "It Is Well With My Soul." Spafford was a Christian, and he sent his wife and four daughters on a trip over to Europe. And unfortunately, on the voyage over, his family's ship collided with another ship, and their ship sank quickly. His wife survived the disaster, but his four daughters all died. And so Spafford gets on a boat to go to Europe to comfort his wife, who's over there. And as he's passing the part of the ocean where his daughters passed away, he wrote these lyrics. He says, "When peace like a river attends my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot you've taught me to say, it is well with my soul." So here's a tremendous tragedy, and yet he's finding the kind of soul rest that Jesus describes. How's that possible? Well, he had this settled sense of anticipation and confidence that he'd see his daughters again, that this wasn't the final chapter in his relationship with them. And he was able to say, even with tears, even through this adversity, he was able to say, honestly, it's well with my soul. That didn't mean it wasn't difficult. But remember, this isn't the kind of rest that Jesus offers. This isn't a cessation of work. This isn't the end of tragedy. This isn't, you know, the last time you'll see difficulties. This is a rest that transcends all that, that you can experience in the midst of that, and that Jesus wants you to have, a soul rest. That's what he's offering. And man, do we need it. I think it's pretty evident. Anybody who's honest, who takes a look at just the different things that we face in this world, we have to admit, we need this. We all have a part of us that calls out for this. Think about relationships that you might lose, or you think about, you know, problems at work that aren't getting resolved, guilt and regret over past things that you've done, living up to the expectations of those people that you really want to please and impress. Or maybe there's someone who's unsafe in your life and you feel threatened by them. There's, you know, we're getting older, things are breaking, things don't work the way they used to. And if all that's not enough, there's just the sheer reality of the fact that you're going to die. This is where we're headed. We're headed to death, right? So you look at these stresses, and it's no wonder that as Jesus surveyed the eyes of the crowd, he said, "Look, come to me, because I know you need this. You need to come to me for this rest, because these are burdens that you're not able to handle. You need somebody to step in and take these off your shoulders." Stephen Wright used to tell this joke. You guys know who Stephen Wright is? He's one of my favorite comedians. He has a real deadpan delivery. He never really gets emotional, just kind of a level deadpan delivery. He says, you know when you're sitting on a chair and you lean back so you're just on two legs and you lean too far so you almost fall over? But at the last second, you catch yourself. You know that, you know that feeling? He's like, "I feel that way all the time." It's hilarious. It's funny. It's funnier when he says it, but the feeling of, you know that feeling? We do feel that a lot. All jokes aside, we feel it way too often. And Jesus knows that, and he wants to give us rest. So that's what he's putting forth for us. Of course, he says he has it. And that's a pretty crazy claim if you think about it. Jesus is saying, if you come to me, I can give you this soul rest. You know, imagine somebody walking around Easton, going up to shoppers at Easton saying, "I want to give you rest." And they're like, "You mean you want me to give you my bags?" "No, I want to give you soul rest. Me. You need me." That would be so weird for somebody to do that. And yet this is exactly what Jesus is saying. Come to him, to the person of Christ, and get this rest that you need. Now, when I think about getting soul rest, these are the kind of places I want to go. There are a lot of competitors to this offer Jesus is making. I think, man, if I can get a cottage somewhere, some really cool location, I can get into some serious soul rest. Or here's a daydream of mine. If I could just build myself a treehouse, I could just climb up in that thing and forget about everybody. And there's, you know, so many different ways we go after rest. You think about the hope that we could reach a point where we're financially secure. The idea that maybe with a routine of diet and exercise, of thinking rightly and meditation, we can achieve some kind of life balance that gives us soul rest, deep rest. You know, the nutty thing about all this is what's crazy about it, is no culture in the history of planet Earth has had more access to these kinds of approaches to finding deep rest than us. And we are one of the most stressed out cultures that's ever lived. It's not working. You look at this, there was a study done a while ago. It was the Stress in America survey. It was done by the American Psychological Association. And here's an article where a scholar's kind of reflecting on the results of that study. He says, boil down the findings from the APA's 2010 Stress in America survey, and the message is clear. Chronic stress, stress that interferes with your ability to function normally over an extended period, is becoming a public health crisis. And that's undeniably true. And if I think we take an honest look into our own heart, we'd see, yeah, I need this thing that Jesus is offering. You know, what are your alternatives? Think hard about that. Where are we going to go to get the kind of rest that Jesus is offering? He says he's the only place you can get it. You know, we think about the causes. There's money, work and the economy, family, significant relationships. You think about the symptoms, irritability, anger, chronic fatigue, apathetic disengagement, you know, retreat. I don't need to even tell you about this because we're so familiar with it. This is, you know, this is the oxygen that we breathe in and out. You know, a long time ago, way before Jesus was on earth, God made a similar offer of rest to his people, to the people of Israel. This is what the Lord says in Jeremiah 6:16. Stop at the crossroads and look around. Ask for the old godly way and walk in it. Travel its path, and you'll find rest for your souls, God says. But then he says, the people replied, no, that's not the road that we want. So God extended this offer to his people, and they said no. And you know, we stand at a similar crossroads right now. We can keep charging off and finding rest the way we see fit, or we can come to Jesus for it. We have to decide. We have to decide. All right, so how, if we decide we do want to get this from Jesus, how are we going to get it? Well, if you look at the passage, it's very simple. He says there are two things, there's two commands here that we should pay attention to. One is, come to me. Very simple, and this is the kind of thing anyone can do. He says, take my yoke upon you. Another pretty simple command to understand. Now, they're not synonymous. They sound similar, but they really are different. The first is something we have to initially do to even know God in the first place. The second is something where we take the posture of a learner. And over time, we're putting ourselves under Jesus' instruction and learning a way of life from him that leads to rest. And so we want to look at both of these as we just kind of go through this passage. Let's talk about coming to Jesus first. Come to Jesus. Coming to him. Pretty simple concept. The problem is not everybody sees their need. If you study the verses preceding this passage, people in the crowd thought that they were wise and intelligent. They had seen Jesus do a lot of miracles, but they didn't see any need for him. They didn't have that childlike willingness to learn from Jesus and come to him. They were just like, we just don't really see anything of value that you have to offer. And truth be told, a lot of us feel the same way. A lot of us feel like we're just fine. the way we are. And Jesus is aware of that and would push back and say, no, there is something you're not fine with. There is a burden that you cannot bear. And it's the burden of your sin. The things that you've done that offend God and that hurt other people. That's something that nobody can deal with, that nobody can remove the weight of. That's a palpable reality in your life that separates you from God. Something apart from help, outside of yourself, you can't deal with. And David describes this in his own life, King David in Psalm 38. He says, my health is broken because of my sins. My guilt overwhelms me. It's a burden too heavy to bear. You know, he did some bad stuff, but this wasn't just this a situation specific or unique to David. This is the human condition. If you look at Romans 3:10, Paul says that no one is righteous, not even one. Nobody's ever lived that's been able to look at God and say, I've through self-effort and moral rectitude found a way to be pleasing to you. Now, we're weighed down by sin, and it's a burden that we can't handle. In Revelation, the Apostle John describes Jesus as the solution. He says he's the one who loves us and released us from our sins by his blood. And the blood that he's talking about is the blood that Jesus lost when he was dying on the cross. Jesus was willingly crucified for us. He bore the burden of our sin and was punished for our sin, even though we deserve to be, himself for us on the cross. His willingness to endure that makes it possible for him to release us from our sins. I don't know if you've ever been on like on a long backpacking trip where you've got a 50-pound backpack on your shoulders. Maybe you walk 10 miles. That feeling when you take that backpack off it's incredible. It's like you're walking on the moon. There's kind of a lightness. There's this sense that you can almost jump 10 feet up in the air. And Jesus is saying he can do that for you with this burden of sin. He can lift it off your back, remove the weight of punishment that we deserve for it, and take that on himself. We have to just come to him and call out to him and ask him for this. And this is the first step in moving toward having the kind of rest that Jesus is describing. Now, the other thing he says is take my yoke upon you. And what I'm going to do to try to explain this is I'm just going to ask and answer a series of questions. Hopefully by the end of those, you have a better sense of what Jesus meant by take my yoke upon you. Now, how do we do this? Back in Jesus' time, 2,000 years ago, they had these guys called rabbis, religious teachers. And to take the yoke of a rabbi was an idiom, and it just meant to come underneath their instruction and to learn their way of life. So if I was going to take up the yoke of somebody in this room, I'd get with them, I'd spend time with them, I'd learn from them, not just a body of knowledge, but a way to live. You think about what Jesus is inviting you to do. He's saying, how about coming alongside me and learning from me this way of life? That's what he says. Take up my yoke and learn from me. Now, we got to be careful when we think about this, when you're visualizing this. In the West, when we think of learning, we think of this kind of setting. I'm in a classroom, there's a teacher, and he's speaking, and I'm writing down notes. That's not the image that we're given here. This is the image, right? These oxen yoked together by that yoke. And Jesus is saying, come next to me, get alongside me. Walk through life with me. Learn to live the way I live. It's a different type of invitation. If I wanted to learn how to make a handcrafted violin, I couldn't do that through a correspondence course, right? I'd have to find a violin maker, figure out where the guy lives, and spend a couple years with him in his shop learning this craft, learning how to skillfully make a violin. And Jesus' invitation is it's more like that. Come learn from me how to be humble and gentle. Learn from me. And as you do, the result of that process is that you'll find rest. Look what he says here. What is it we're supposed to learn? Learn from me, he says, for I am gentle and humble in heart. These are qualities that drove everything that Jesus did, that dictated the way he lived. And he wants to help us embrace that same type of lifestyle. So I think it would be helpful here. I think this would be good just to take a second and learn a little bit about how Jesus was gentle and humble. How did he live these qualities out in his life? Think about gentleness. Now, actually, a better word for this would be meekness. Gentle doesn't quite get it. It's meek, to be meek. That's a quality that Jesus had. Now, when you hear the word meek, a lot of times people think of weakness, somebody who's kind of a doormat, or maybe somebody with low self-esteem. But study the life of Christ. Was he a doormat? No way. That's not the way I see it. Did he have low self-esteem? He thought he was the Son of God. No, he didn't have the low, did not have low self-esteem. What we see in the life of Christ is power under control. He's this divine, he's God in human flesh, and yet he always exercised his power as God under the direction of the Father. For years I've been taking my daughters, not so much anymore, but we used to go to the fair to watch the Clydesdales. And if you've ever seen a Clydesdale up close, they're enormous. Just a bundle of bristling muscles, power. Just you look at these things, they're just bred to be strong. And it always blows my mind how this little trainer can get out there, hook them up to a cart, and they do exactly what they're told. Complete compliance and a willingness, you know, to trust the guidance and direction of the trainer, even though there's great strength and power. That's what you see with Jesus. Look at just how clearly he puts this. I've come down from heaven to do the will of God who sent me, not to do what I want. Or what about this? And this gives us a sense of what he was like even before he came to earth. Jesus said, I'm not here on my own. The Father sent me. So this isn't some thing he started doing. He didn't become meek once he came to earth. It was meekness that brought him here. This is an intrinsic quality that Jesus has. Here's the ultimate example. Even as he faced the end of his own life, he expressed this gentle meekness by saying, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And so what we see in the life of Jesus is a trust in the Father, in his goodness, that leads to leadability. I have no idea if leadability is a word, but that's the sense of it, is somebody who's guidable and leadable. And when they express their power and strength, it's under the direction of the Father. Now, humility, here's another word that's often misunderstood. We think of somebody who poor mouths themselves, and they're like, yeah, I can't really take credit for that. Somebody who doesn't want the limelight or the spotlight. Jesus' version of humility was much more aggressive than that, much more active than that. What it looked like in his life was putting other people's needs first. I mean, this was his mission statement. He said, even the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. That was a guiding principle. You see this in the way he washed the disciples' feet. You see this in the way he stayed up all night serving people and feeding them till his disciples were tired and complaining. You see it in how he laid his life down so that he could take on the burden of our sin. He says, greater love than this has no one than this, that one lay his life down for his friends. You see it in the way he shut down the debate among the disciples about who was the greatest. He said, no, there won't be any more of this. If anyone wants to be first, he'll be the last of all and the servant of all. This is humility. And just like we saw with this meekness or gentleness, it's really based on a trust in the Father so strong, a trust that the Father is going to look after his own life, that he can direct his full attention to caring for other people and putting their needs first. And Jesus says, come to me, take up this yoke, learn this from me. And in that, you'll find great rest. There's release from a lot of the burdens we struggle with. Real freedom and soul rest as we embrace this yoke and come alongside Jesus and pursue this lifestyle. What's keeping us from living this way? You know, if this was so easy, why aren't we all doing it? Well, there are a lot of things that make it difficult. I'll tell you one thing. It's hard to put a yoke on when you've already got a couple on already. And we have a lot of different yokes. One big yoke is the yoke of religion. You know, Jesus was, one of the things that upset him most was how the religious authorities of his day were laying this heavy yoke of performance on people, demanding that they perform and observe all these laws in order to earn God's acceptance. It really angered Jesus. He says, "Woe to you, lawyers, as well, for you weigh men down with burdens hard to bear, while you yourselves won't even touch the burdens with one of your fingers." You know, perform, perform, perform. That's all they were hearing from these religious leaders. Maybe that's all you've ever heard. Perform and achieve at school and at work and on athletics. Well, any good thing you ever get from anybody is going to come via performance. Well, whether it's for God or other people, it's a religion of sorts. And that's a yoke you have to lay down to pick up Jesus' yoke. Jesus' life isn't that way. Jesus doesn't demand performance for acceptance, performance for worth. That's not how he operates. There's a story, I think it's in Luke 10, where these two guys come up to the temple. Jesus is telling the story, and one guy is a very self-righteous religious person, bragging about how good he is. And the other guy is a tax collector who's stealing money from his own people, a very wicked person. And Jesus says the tax collector, standing some distance away from the temple, was even unwilling to lift up his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, "God, be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man is the one who went away justified." You know, what does God want from us? What is the yoke? It's humility. It's to recognize I was never built to handle these burdens, these yokes that I've put on myself. And it's the humility to lay that aside. You know, water seeks its lowest point. And God's power will find you if you have the humility to admit that you need it. And that's not just a coming to God for salvation thing. That's a living the Christian life thing. We have to forsake this performance in order to make a name for ourselves, performance in order to be accepted by God or anybody else. What about the yoke of managing the future? Oh, yeah, it's really hard to totally manage your future. Jesus almost kind of teased people with how ridiculous the notion is that you could, through careful, you know, control and management, actually affect what happens to you in the future. Look what he says here. "Who of you, by being worried, can add a single hour to his life? Don't worry saying, 'What will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear for clothing?' Your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things are going to be added unto you." What's he saying? He's saying all your hand-wringing and planning, is it going to buy you any more control over your future? It's like, no way. That's God's bailiwick. That's his responsibility. Your job is meekness, right? To entrust yourself to God and to seek first his kingdom. He'll take care of the rest. I'll tell you, there are so many yokes that we carry, worrying about what people think. Oh, I've been crushed by this. This is such a tremendous burden. What about being unable to come clean about your sin, walking around knowing something no one else knows, and being weighed down by that, or holding on to resentment that we just can't let go of? All of these things. All of these things are a present obstacle to helping us experience the rest that God wants to give you. You know, they all have something in common, too. There is a certain insanity to each one of them. I can manage the future. I can control what people think about me. I can muster up the strength to do everything just right and perform and achieve. What is that real? What's that core thing that's really driving every one of these yokes? It's not hard to figure out. It's pride. Pride is at the root of all of these things. And pride is bad news. Pride has everything to do with why we're not experiencing soul rest. I go jogging a lot around my neighborhood. One of my favorite routes is through a farm at Ohio State called the Waterman Farm. It's right there at Lane and Kenny. You're not supposed to go there, but I do all the time. So I jog through there, and I've done a lot of jogging out in the country and stuff. If you jog on a farm, you have to be very careful. There are a lot of things you could trip and hurt yourself on. One of the worst, and I've heard about this happening to people, is a groundhog hole. Because you'll be running down a certain stretch earlier in the week, and then later in the week, groundhogs are incredible. They'll like dig these huge holes right in the path where you run. And if you're not looking for those, and you happen to be jogging along and your leg slides through that hole as you're moving forward, it will snap like a dry piece of wood. And you can feel the pain of that, right? It's painful. Just hold on to that pain for a second. Because that's what pride is doing to our lives. Pride is keeping some of us from ever coming to know God, and is keeping some of us who know God from ever experiencing the rest that He wants to give us. There is a real cost to holding on to these yokes and not letting them go and not embracing the life that Jesus, the lifestyle He has for us. So what can we do? Ooh, yeah, what can we do? I'll tell you, pride is very tenacious. Pride is not something we do. We are by nature prideful, and it does not die easily. You guys ever seen one of these? They're here. They're all over the world. It's called a tardigrade. It's about a millimeter long. And they're on the North Pole, South Pole, every continent on the planet, in your backyard. They're all over the place. And what's unique about these little creatures is they're virtually indestructible. You can boil them. No joke. You can boil them. You can crush them. You can dehydrate them. You can bombard them with radiation. And they will not die. People have studied this. It's true. Now you're not going to be able to think of anything else I say. You're going to be like, oh, there's a tardigrade around here. They're there. They don't bother you, apparently. But that's the way they are. And this is the way pride is, often unseen and virtually indestructible. If we want help with pride, it's going to have to come from the outside. Let me just give you an example of what I'm talking about. If there was any group of men that you would think had a grip on their pride, it would be the disciples, right? They were with Jesus. They left everything to follow Him. They sat under His teachings. They went into danger with Him. They obeyed Him. And yet, what was the running conversation throughout most of His ministry? It was like we saw earlier. Who was the greatest? Right? On the night before Jesus died, what was the debate? It was who was the greatest? Aware of this, Andrew Murray comments. He says, deeper down, talking about the disciples, deeper down than all their sincerity and good intentions lay a dark power. They were hardly aware of how hideous it was, or that it even existed. For 3 years, the disciples had been under the apprenticeship to Jesus Christ, and He let them know up front His main curriculum. Let me teach you because I'm humble and gentle. Time after time, He spoke to them, to the Pharisees, to the crowds, that humility was the only path of glory. He had not only lived His life before them, He'd openly shared His secret ambition. I came not to be served, but to serve and give my life as a ransom for many. He washed their feet. He told them they were to follow His example. And yet, every last one of them had learned so little. You see, if you get this, if you get how tenacious pride is, you realize you need to come to Jesus. You need His help. Murray concludes. He says, no resolve is sincere enough to change a person's heart. Nothing can make a lasting difference unless a new heart with Christ-like humility takes the place of the old. It takes a miracle. You know, can pride survive in the environment where you're, you know, zealously serving Christ? Yes, it can. And so we really do. We need to call out to Christ, and we need him to step in and give us his humility and his meekness. This is a quality that he has that he needs to live out through us. It's not something we can manufacture on our own. I hope that makes sense. What are some practical steps you can take? Here's a simple one. Is you got to call out to Jesus and tell him you want it. And I know, it's one thing to kind of go, yeah, that's probably the way I should be. It's another thing to be desperate and to tell Jesus, I am proud. I want to be broken. I want to learn. I want to come under you, and I want to learn from you and come into this yoke and learn meekness and humility. Where we're pleading with God for it, that's different. And that's something you need to do. That's something I need to do. There's a great Psalm 131. David describes how he's composed and quieted his soul like a weaned child rests against his mother. He says, my soul is like a weaned child within me. Boy, what a great picture of soul rest. I want this. Well, look at the verse that precedes it. He says, my heart is not proud, nor my eyes haughty, nor, and listen to this, this is important, I don't involve myself in great matters or in things too difficult for me. That doesn't mean he's not willing to take a big job. He's the king of Israel. But he knew the yokes he didn't need to hold on to, and he was willing to lay them down and depend on God instead. And so, Lord, you know my pride. Take me under your instruction. Have your way with me and break me and teach me meekness and humility. You have to call out to God and ask him for that on a regular basis. How about this? Learning from Jesus, right? We saw that this was a key part of this taking up the yoke is learning, sitting at his feet and listening to his instruction. You know, a lot of us have heard that famous story about Mary and Martha having Jesus over for dinner. Martha's making all the food and running around. Mary's sitting at Jesus' feet. Martha gets so upset with both of them, she rebukes Jesus for letting her do all the work. Remember what Jesus said? He said, Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary, for Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. You know, she's doing, this is life itself that she's prioritizing. This is the thing she needs to do. How can we say that we've come into the yoke with Jesus unless we're sitting under his word, not just here, but our own time before him, unless we're prayerfully asking him to guide us and instruct us, you know, visualizing him with us every step of every day of our lives? We need to come to him with that learner's posture. Those are two key things. How does all this lead to rest? I hope maybe it's obvious by now. Jesus says, you do this, you know, you adopt this lifestyle for me, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, when you have completely entrusted the exercise of your power and strength to the direction of the Father, and you're kind of waiting on him for guidance on what to do, and when you're so persuaded that he's good, that you're released from pleasing people and performing for people so that you can focus on loving them, there is a lightness. There is a resilience. There is a rest that's there. That doesn't mean it's a physical rest. That doesn't mean we'll never be physically tired. It doesn't mean there won't be vigorous service. Jesus, look at his life. It was not a life of indolence and laziness. But it does mean, even in the midst of all that, you can experience this kind of freedom and rest that he's describing. This idea of an easy yoke and a light burden. Okay, a couple final thoughts. Definitely want to come to him. And I just would really reiterate, if you're here and you're feeling weighed down by your sin, you don't have to carry that. Ask Jesus to lift that off your back by just appealing to him to forgive you. And if you don't feel like you're getting rest, you're not going to find the solution in tweaking your schedule, in juggling a couple relationships, in picking up a new exercise program. Those all have their place. I'm not saying those aren't useful. I'm just saying you have to come to Jesus with a learner's posture, specifically letting him address your pride, inviting him to teach you gentleness and humility. This is what you need. You may not feel like you need it, but this is what you need. And when you pursue that in faith, you're going to find rest. And don't get cynical. Don't get cynical about this. This is a real offer. And I'm not saying I've perfectly experienced this every day of my life, but I have experienced this. Many of us have. This is right where God wants you to be, and you can have it if you really heed what he's saying in this passage. So, okay. That's it.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.